Welcome to an abolition of five of the best. This one is going to be explorers, about explorers. It's going to be a shorter one. This is a hobby podcast, and well, I'll be doing them every 10-11 days now. Some of the explorers, they're called explorers, and there are some very famous explorers, but I don't think they'll be called explorers by today's standards. There's a video on Amerigo Vespucci, I think his name was. That's worth watching. And there's some other videos on the site as well. Okay, that's it. The next explorer I'm going to talk about is, he's a very famous explorer. In fact, if you name the top explorers, you'll come up with this name. And I always thought he was an explorer, but having done this, I don't think he was. Anyway, his name is Sir Francis Drake, and he was born in Cornwall in 1544. And he was the eldest of 12 sons. And clearly this is a very different time. And he grew up with a Protestant father, and because of religious persecution, he was hounded out of the area. It's not unusual, or it is unusual, to be able to point your finger and say it's all your fault, but with Henry VIII you definitely can. The family moved to Plymouth, where his father worked as a vicar, and from here he Francis Drake was taken on by a boat captain, and he ferried goods to and from France. And when the boat captain died, he saw the potential in Francis Drake and bequeathed him the boat, which he sold. And so he got a foothold. That was very important for him at the time. Anyway, moving on. In 1563, he joined his cousin John Humphreys, and they went on a trip to Sierra Leone, and they captured slaves and brought them back and sold them all around Europe. It's not clear how many times he did this, but he did get the attention of Queen Elizabeth I, because in 1563 he commissioned Drake and to go on to work as a privateer. And a privateer is a licensed way to say a pirate. I said 63, I meant 67 he became a privateer, and he became a very good privateer. His target was to target Spanish ships, and basically to steal any gold from Spanish ships, and any goods which Spanish ships were carrying, he was to steal. And he went to Spanish ports and disrupted the Spanish ports. And under a few life-threatening situations, he came back to the UK, and with a booty of Spanish gold and silver, and he became known as a brilliant privateer. This success led to Queen Elizabeth I commissioning Drake again in 1577 to take part in a five-ship fleet to go to the Pacific and harry the Spanish in the Pacific, in Mexico and California. He was to be dual control with Doherty and John White Winter, who was a writer. The fleet went down to the Brazil. They plundered a few Spanish ships, and by the time they got to the Magellan Straits, there was tension between the captains. And in fact, Drake said that he was going to take control. And especially Doherty was very unhappy with this, and with Drake suspecting that he was going to commit mutiny, he arrested Doherty, put him on a trumped up charge, found him guilty, and beheaded him. John Winter then detached himself from the fleet and went back home to the UK. One ship was lost and never seen again. Another ship was just sunk. And this left Francis Drake with just one ship called the Pelican. He stopped off, did some repairs, and renamed it the Golden Hind. And he carried on his own, and he had some lucky meetings with Spanish boats which were carrying absolutely huge amounts of gold. And he plundered the two boats and went up his way. He went up to California, did some plundering of the Spanish there. Baja California, the boat needed some repair. He repaired the boat and got ready for crossing of the Pacific. In 1581, he crossed the Pacific to Africa, around the Horn, back to Sierra Leone, and then back to England. He was the second person to circumnavigate the world, and the first Englishman. Upon returning, he became a very wealthy man with his plundered gold, and he became the Queen knighted him, so he became Sir Francis Drake, and he then became part of the Admiralty and part of the Royal Navy. The story continues with Sir Francis Drake in 1588, and as part of the Admiralty, he was defending the Spanish Armada, the Spanish getting sick and tired of the British taking. The Spanish were the world power at the time. They had a huge empire. They were the people with the big stick. And they decided that they were going to launch a campaign to capture England. And it was Sir Francis Drake. There's a few videos. There's a TV program called Horrible Histories, which is fantastic. It's meant for children, but everyone watches it. And there's a video of the Spanish Armada, and basically it shows pure luck. Sir Francis Drake's story is basically pure luck. You just wonder where he would have been if the captain of the barge did not leave the barge to him. As they say, it's better to be lucky than to be good. And in 1588, Francis Drake was lucky, as he has been. Anyway, when he was given chance to prove his military prowess, he went up against the Spanish and lost 30 ships, and that was the end of him with the Admiralty. And he went on another, in fact, probably that's when his luck changed. He went in another privateer in Panama, and that was the end of him. But watch the videos, and it's a great story. The first explorer I'm going to talk about, people might question whether he was explorer, but in my mind he was. I can talk about Alexander the Great. In my mind, he was an explorer because of his ambition. He was always looking to look over the horizon to what was over the hill. And the thing is, the way he did this was by expanding his empire. I'm going to talk about his father, Philip II. Philip II of Macedonia. And this Macedonia was a country just north of Greece, and Philip was an outstanding general, and he turned Macedonia into the powerhouse of the area. He brought countries together, and under Philip II, he formed a coalition with the Macedonians and most of the Greek country areas. And the only party part of the coalition was the Spartans. And he sent the Spartans a message saying that, join us, and if you don't, we will send our army. And if our army comes to your land, we will burn your temples, burn your villages, and burn your men. And the Spartans returned the message with a simple word, if. And with that, Philip decided to leave the Spartans alone and to concentrate elsewhere. Unfortunately, in the long run, the Spartans won, and they were the powerhouse in the future. But not till after Philip's son,
who was Alexander. And King Philip II had 8 wives, and his 4th wife, Olympia, was the person to give birth to a son first. And it was Alexander. In his early years, he had a very privileged lifestyle. He was in fact educated by Archimedes, and in return for educating Alexander, Archimedes' hometown was rebuilt by Philip. And in his youth, he was given a horse called Bucephalus, and no one could ride this horse. And Philip was just about to return the horse when Alexander noticed that he was frightened of his shadow. So he took the horse out into bright sunlight, and that's a story. Took him out into bright sunlight where the horse could not see its shadow, and managed to tame and ride it. And Bucephalus is the horse that Alexander rode all through his life. And Bucephalus carried Alexander all on his travels.
It was Aristotle that gave Alexander the Wanderlust with his teachings about other countries, and he also told Alexander that at the other side of India there was an ocean which would lead to the end of the world. But meanwhile, relations with Philip and his 8 wives, and one in particular, disintegrated, and he left Olympia, who was his main wife, and all the others, and set up court with Cleopatra of Macedonia. And in fact, he exiled Alexander and his mother, and they both lived in exile. He came back to the court a few months later, and but after that, Philip II was assassinated, and there was a power vacuum, and people thought that it was Alexander who murdered his father. And Alexander at this time grabbed the throne. He then murdered anyone who opposed his power. There was an uprising in Greece against him. He went over to Greece and crushed that, and anyone still left there were then enslaved. And this was giving warning that this was not a person to be messed with. Anyway, it worked, and he became the king of Macedonia and Greece. And he set his sights on the old foe, which was the Persians. And the Persians at the time were the biggest, most powerful nation on the planet. And the first battle with the Persians happened near Troy, near in a place called Grecians. And this is where Alexander's military brilliance just shined. He was outnumbered 4-1, and yet he still beat the Persians. And this rout continued. He just marched through Persia, taking cities and towns almost at will. And there's a video on the website which explains that the battles and his progress through Persia. He made it into Egypt, and in Egypt he was seen as a liberator, and he was welcomed into Egypt. In fact, the town, the city Alexandria, was named after him, and there are a number of towns and cities around the world named after Alexander in that area. And Alexander's interest in other cultures led him to go to India and Afghanistan. Alexander always integrated with the society he was in. He learned new languages, and when in Persia he actually dressed in Persian clothes, something that the Greeks found a bit mortifying because they considered the Persians to be the barbarians. But while in India, he also met an Indian princess called Roxanne, and he was infatuated with her and actually married her. And that's the only marriage he took. He could have taken her as a concubine, but he actually married her. And for the Greeks, for someone to have an Indian princess or an Indian queen was a bit baffling. But this was a typical of Alexander. After 8 years of campaigning, this great military leader, who was never defeated, was defeated by his own soldiers, who refused to move into India any further. They wanted to go back home, and so Alexander was forced to go back. And it was on the journey back, in fact, in Babylon, when he was celebrating or getting back, he grew ill and got a fever and died at the age of 33. There are videos on the website. The next person I'm going to talk about is Marco Polo. Although he is very famous now, it's really just a quirk of fate that we even know his name and his story. Marco Polo returned to Vienna after 17 years travelling, and he came back home to Vienna to find if they were at war with Genoa. And he was captured while on a boat, and he spent 7 months in a prison cell with a romantic novelist by the name of Rostino de Pisa. I'm slaughtering these names, but... And it was Rostincello who actually published the books or the stories, and they became extremely popular. In fact, many people thought they were just a work of fiction, and we'll come back to that later. But the story really starts when Marco Polo was born. Marco Polo was born in 1254 to a wealthy merchant family, and his mother died when he was an infant, and his father he didn't meet until he was 17 years old. His father and his brother were in fact away looking for new suppliers in Asia, and when his father and his brother came back, Marco was 17, and his father and his brother came back from, in fact, they came back from China, and they'd met Kublai Khan, who was the grandson of Genghis Khan. And Kublai Khan was the Mongol leader of China at the time. And he was interested in learning about the West and about Christianity. And he offered the pair vast riches if they came back. And that's what the two brothers did. They set about making trips to go back to China, and that's where the 17-year-old Marco Polo joined them on their journey to China. The journey to China was extremely treacherous. From Vienna, they went to Jerusalem to try and persuade two priests to come with them. Two priests did come, but dropped out after 2 months. The journey to China took 4 years, and they crossed vast deserts and loads of bandit country, and it's a miracle that they made it there and back alive. There's a map on the website which shows their journey to China and back again. So it took 4 years to get to China, and once in China, in fact, they had a ticket from Kublai Khan, which said that if anyone dealt any harm to these people, they'd be put to death straight away. So once in China, they were relatively safe. They met Kublai Khan, and Kublai Khan was a very modernizing leader. He was very tolerant of Christianity, and the whole China actually flourished under him. And the Marco Polos, or the Polos, worked for Kublai Khan for the next 17 years. This is where the conspiracy theorists don't agree, because there's no record of the Polos in China. And some of the stories which Marco Polo tells in his book, that he tells them that fact that they played a part in a battle, and the battle took place, in fact, 3 years before they even entered China. So there are discrepancies in the Marco Polo story, and you wonder if he might have elaborated a bit to Rostino when he was in his prison cell. After 17 years working for Kublai Khan, they decided to go back home, and the journey back home took just 2 years opposed to just four, in part because they travelled by boat for a part of it. The fact that the three of them made it there and back at the time they were doing it is nothing short of a miracle, in my view. There are
huge discrepancies in the Marco Polo story, and some people don't think he even went to China. Some people just think he went to the outskirts of China. There's discrepancies in, because he never described the Great Wall of China, and there are huge discrepancies. But he describes paper money, and he describes burning of coal, none of which was happening in Europe at the time. I think, although the book has been published and published many times, it's inspired people then and it inspires people now. And although it might not be true, you have to work, make your own mind up for pros and cons, I still think he's definitely a great explorer.